First, it was the Air Force, now the Army. The military services say their budgets are shrinking, but their warfighting demands are not. So they're looking for as many ways as they can to free up their uniformed personnel to focus on military readiness. Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu writes about the Army's latest move to do away with administrative burdens and ancillary training as part of this week's edition of Inside the DoD Reporter's Notebook. And I guess, Jared, a lot goes overboard, so to speak, to mix our metaphors here, when things get that tight.
That's right. And as we understand it, Tom, this initiative was laid out in a recent memo by Eric Fanning, the new Secretary of the Army, who, as people will remember, used to be the Undersecretary and Chief Management Officer of the Air Force. There may be some connection there. And some explanation for why that sounds so similar, perhaps, to what the Army has been doing. I'll confess I have not been able to lay my hands on the physical memo that describes all this just yet, but we do hope to post a copy of it in the next day or two. In lieu of that, we're going on descriptions of what's been happening from Fanning himself at last week's Association of the U.S. Army Conference in Washington and from Mark Milley, the Army Chief of Staff. So one of the big focus areas, as you kind of alluded to, is training. As Fanning described it, they're loosening up on some of the training requirements that come from higher headquarters throughout the Army, whether that's the Army staff at the Pentagon or Army Forces Command or Training and Doctrine Command. And when we say training, we're not talking about physical training or weapons training, for example. You know, in this context, it's the computer-based kind of click-through drills that are supposed to educate soldiers on various Army initiatives of all sorts. I'm sure there are a lot of those going on right now, for example, in connection with Cybersecurity Awareness Month. Not all of the mandates are necessarily going to go away completely, but what they're doing is giving local commanders a lot more discretion to prioritize what their troops really need to do and how to deliver that training. As Fanning put it, you know, rather than having them walk through the PowerPoint slides one by one, exactly as they're put together by those higher headquarters, commanders are going to have some discretion on deciding, okay, first of all, do we really need to do this one? And second of all, is there a better way to make sure soldiers understand what, you know, the messages that we really are trying to get across here?
And is there any bottom-ups element to this? That is to say, are they listening to the soldiers themselves at all, or is this strictly what management and the leadership seem to think?
Not as far as we know. So as we understand it, this is mostly going to be a Pentagon-led drill, and perhaps also by the higher headquarters. They're exercising what General Mark Milley calls line item veto authority, where they're going to go through all of these, what he calls layers. And he says that the last he saw, when you add them all together, when you add what the Army headquarters asks people to do, combined with TRADOC, combined with Army ForceCom, it's 12 pages of single-spaced, nine-point type, you know, going through all the activities, a unit has to do once you get down to the level of a company commander or a first sergeant. So according to Milley, it's not just training that's the problem. It extends to a whole lot of administrative minutiae. And I'm going to play just a little bit of tape here. This is Milley describing the initiative at an Army Family Forum last week in his classic understated fashion.
Any task that is not directly associated with readiness, combat readiness, preparation for war, etc., and cease fire on all this stuff. What's happened, and it's not just recent, this has been cumulative over years, what's happened is everyone who has a computer thinks they're Leo Tolstoy and they want to write, you know, 50,000 requirements out there. And these staffs, frankly, are large. Company commander has no staff. And everybody writes and cranks out tasks and things to do. And it ultimately ends up in the inbox of a first sergeant. And it's not doable. It's not humanly doable. And it has a lot of second and third and fourth order implications. So there is actually a recognition of the problem, and there's a deliberate methodology that we're approaching to try to reduce that problem.
Again, General Mark Milley, the Army Chief of Staff. So once again, Tom, we'll post that memo once we get a hold of it and pass along some more details once we understand a little bit more of the details of what the Army's actually trying to do. But as you kind of alluded to earlier, one of the reasons behind this is, again, the Army's drawing down the things it is being asked to do. You know, that job jar is not shrinking, so they're trying to figure out how to make their personnel stretch a little bit further.
Yeah, and later in this hour, we have analysis from Dave Barno and Nora Bensahel of American University on their report on the shrinking of the Army budgets. We're speaking to Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu, and there's an irony that you're also reporting this week, and that is, for the first time in a long time, the Army has had great success with meeting its recruiting goals.
Yeah, it's really not been a problem in the active component of the Army, with the exception of last year when they fell just, you know, about a few hundred soldiers short, which is not a huge deal when you're trying to recruit 62,500 500 new soldiers every year.
That's like Google every new year, every year.
Exactly, yeah. Even in the context of an Army drawdown, they still have a huge recruiting burden, much larger than any of the services, probably all the other services put together, actually. The problem over the years really has been the Army Reserve. Over the last 6 years, they've really failed to meet their recruiting goals, again, with the exception of last year when they actually met them. But for the first time in 5 years, Army Recruiting Command met its goals in both the both in the active component and in the Army Reserve. It's been a problem for the Reserve, as I mentioned, for the last several consecutive years. In 2013, for example, they only met about 77% of their goals. One of the reasons the Army Reserve is harder to recruit for is, you know, they provide a lot of the enabling capabilities to the Army, things like medical, a lot of IT support, and they've got to recruit into, you know, from very specific geographic regions where there happens to be an Army Reserve drilling center. So that makes things more difficult than when you can pull from literally any community in the country, process somebody into the active Army, and send them wherever they're needed. The Army Reserve is much more localized. So that's some good news on that front. In other recruiting news, in an interview, the commander of Army Recruiting Command told me that they're going to start a pilot project this year to start integrating the National Guard into the recruiting function of the Army, which is an issue that was raised in the National Commission on the Future of the Army's final report earlier this year, when they identified those divisions in recruiting as, you know, one of the reasons for tensions between the active component and the reserve component. So up until now, the National Guard has been responsible for its own recruiting, really putting it in competition with the active Army and with the Army Reserve. So they recommended that the Army start to recruit as one Army. They're going to start a couple pilot projects probably this spring or summer once they get some enabling legislation from Congress to go ahead and do that. And it's going to be interesting to see how that all works out, because of course the National Guard has responsibility not just for the federal mission, but they're also responsible to the governors and the adjutants general in each one of the 54 states and territories where they operate. So they have unique needs that are completely separate and apart from the federal mission that Army Recruiting Command may not even be aware of. So seeing how they integrate those two things is going to be interesting. But if the National Commission is correct, it should help reduce some of that us versus them feeling that you sometimes see between the active and the reserve.
And isn't that part of Milley's grand architecture for the Army, is to have one large integrated force, considering how small the regular Army is relative to 5-10 years ago?
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, and to keep both the National Guard and the Army Reserve as engaged as possible, to have them as part of these teams that are continually rotating throughout the world, so they don't, you know, revert to that sort of Cold War era strategic reserve where they're only called upon into active duty when there's a bona fide emergency.
Federal News Radio's Jared Serbu, appreciate that update.
You bet.
You can read Jared's notebook online now at federalnewsradio.com.